today about this investigation into the security of position-based cryptography using tools from Hamiltonian simulation via holography. And this is a collaborative work with Tamara and Patrick, who are here, and Toby Cubitt and David Perez-Garcia, who are not, but please come and talk to us. And I want to thank Kafir for his time and thoughts on this project as well. Okay, so starting with position-based cryptography, this is a cryptographic protocol where the referees or verifiers use the honest prover's position in space-time as its credential. So like how you would hand your money over to a man at a bank in the day, but maybe not the same man if he was on the street at 3 a.m. So explicitly, you could think about having some verifiers split in different locations who both hold part of a quantum state. They then send this quantum state to the honest prover, who we believe is in the space-time region. The honest prover implements a local unit tree on n qubits and then sends two parts of the quantum state back out to the verifier. If the prover implements this unit tree with a good probability and a high success, then the verifier is going to accept and the protocol is going to be successful. However, these attacks are going to be vulnerable if there can exist some adversaries who exist outside of the specified space-time region that can spoof the referee into thinking that then they are indeed in the specified region. And they'll do this by using some shared entangled state and a round of communication. So the interesting question in cryptography is then how secure are these sorts of protocols? What's interesting here is there's quite weak bounds in terms of what we know in terms of the minimal amount of entanglement you need for a successful attack. So we know that if we have a shared entangled state with the entanglement is exponential in the number of qubits that the local unit tree acts on, then we can always spoof the verifier into believing we were in the correct place. However, the lower bound is only linear in n. So it's really a broad spectrum as to whether the position-based cryptography could be like very secure or basically not secure at all. And this is an interesting open question, but some may believe that maybe it's more likely that position-based is secure, since in some regimes, for example, if there are regularity assumptions on the honest protocol, we can get lower bounds that match the upper bounds. But in general, this is an open case. Okay, so a few years ago, out of the Stanford group, there was this link made between position-based cryptography and holography. So if you consider the like soup can picture of ADS-CFT and position the verifier at the asymptotic boundary, you can build it so that in the bulk, there's a local space-time where the prover can receive the state from the two verifiers, perform a local unit tree, and then send it back out. And then, if we believe in ADS-CFT, we assume there's going to be some dual process going on the boundary, such that if there's a protocol in the bulk that's implementing this protocol with high success, then the same must be happening on the boundary. However, with the space-time positions we've put the verifiers on, you can see that there's no intersection of light cones on the boundary. So this boundary protocol must be non-local, and therefore is giving us an attack on position-based cryptography. So we can also look at the state that the boundary share, the boundary adversaries would share, so the boundary state, and use tools from ADS-CFT, like the area formula, to see that they only share linear entanglement. So if we assume that we can do some unrestricted local unit tree deep in the bulk, then this would give us via holography a conformal boundary where we've implemented some non-local attack using only linear entanglement, and basically breaking position-based cryptography in a much more dramatic way than we have done before. So it's a really interesting idea, but the question is, how practical is this sort of attack? And there are a few assumptions that go into this that the cryptography people maybe want to look at. First of all, can we do this local unit tree deep in the bulk of ADS? And what holographic dictionary we're using in order to extract the non-local attack. And that's the question that we were interested in and which motivated this work. So in order to make this a rigorous attack that we can explicitly describe in terms of circuits and unit trees, we looked at the toy models that we heard about this morning. So thinking about some tensor network model of holography, where we have a time slice of the soup cam, and we have a tensor network on this, where we can use tensor network to map the Hamiltonian and state once, and then time evolve. And it's essential in order to use these toy models to think about position-based cryptography that there's no overlapping region of the causal cones in the boundary. Because if our causal cones in the boundary are overlapping, they could just be doing a local, like a local implementation, and we can't say that they're spoofing the verifiers. They could just be being, there could exist an honest prover. Okay, so what I'm saying in terms of no overlapping region of causal cones, I mean, if we've unwrapped the boundary and these are where the inputs and outputs live, then there needs to be no overlap of the forward light cone of both inputs and the backward light cone of both outputs. And you can see here that if we have nice straight light cones, that's all fine, and there's no local place on the boundary. So there do exist models where we can have a local boundary Hamiltonian, things that we've worked on before. And the natural question that would have been lovely is this enough to recover consistent bulk boundary causality? And can we use these models to implement an attack? And unfortunately, the first answer we came to is no. And this project was sort of pushing that as to see how close can we get, can we go the full way? Okay, so firstly, I want to talk about how we can recover some consistent causality features in a tensor network model of holography. And then go on to talk about, can we use these toy models to construct these attacks? And what do we learn about the security? Awesome. Okay, so I know it's familiar to everyone, but just a quick recap. So when I'm thinking about a holographic tensor network, looking at a time-like slice of ADS, and then discretizing that by choosing some tessellation that respects the hyperbolic metric, then placing a tensor into each polytope, connecting the legs of adjacent tensors, adjacent polytopes, where we leave some dangling legs for each tensor associated with the bulk degrees of freedom, and then at some finite radius r, we truncate the tessellation, and all of the remaining dangling legs are associated with the boundary. We can then look at this tensor as just some big fat tensor that maps us from the bulk Hilbert space to the boundary Hilbert space, such that if I have some bulk operator or state, I can just contract it with the tensor, and it will spit me out a nice boundary operator that acts on my boundary Hilbert space. Okay, so first off, thinking about when we have these tensor networks, what do they give us in terms of if we think about mapping a Hamiltonian and time dynamics on the boundary? So the first models, like the Happy Code and some others, sort of have some issues with this. So if you take some local bulk Hamiltonian and map it out with the tensor network, you can see that you get some dual boundary Hamiltonian where you've got large interactions acting over large portions of the boundary. And in this way, the boundary Hamiltonian doesn't really respect the boundary metric, like there's not too much meaning to two qubits being close together in the boundary if we're allowing global terms over large portions. And in this way, we can't really think about what the causal structure of the boundary Hamiltonian is. Okay, so then one step towards this, which is why we were maybe hopeful, is Tamara and Toby and me have thought about how we can achieve a geometrically local boundary Hamiltonian. So we take a lot of the same tools from the tensor networks, add in additional tools such that we can start with some local Hamiltonian in the bulk, and instead of getting some global boundary interactions, we get a dual boundary term, which is a sum of local interactions. And this is nice because we've respecting the boundary metric a bit more. However, the cost of this is some large interaction strengths, which means that information on the boundary theory can in theory propagate too fast and was one of the big weaknesses of our initial model. So this would have been nice, but unfortunately, there's two big issues with this local boundary Hamiltonian. If we think about particles traveling through the bulk and round the boundary, then the Hamiltonian that acts on the boundary while local allows information to propagate much too fast, such that things can cross the boundary in time that doesn't connect with the bulk theory. And also, if we try and shove in a position-based attack, then we have some light cones, but they're just really fast. So there's this massive area in the boundary where you could be implementing some local unitary. And dig in a bit more. So the way these local boundary Hamiltonians work is you start with the global boundary Hamiltonian that's spat out by the tensor network, and you apply some Hamiltonian simulation to it. So the idea of Hamiltonian simulation is you start with some complex Hamiltonian that's got the interesting physics that might live on quite a complex interaction graph, so have large interacting terms or just be quite abstract. And you want to build some simulator that has a nice regular lattice with local interactions that in some way approximates the physics of H. So by approximating the same physics of H, I mean if I take measurements on my initial system, then they should be somewhat preserved. The thermal properties of the two systems should be preserved. And importantly for this case, we want the time dynamics are preserved in Hamiltonian simulation. But the cost of this is that we've added in some extra qubits, so the number of the space of your Hilbert space is increased, and therefore you need to look at the low energy effective theory of the simulated Hamiltonian. And also crucially here, the interaction strength is increased, which is why we get this, still have this superluminal signaling on the boundary. Okay, so maybe something that is obvious to lots of people in this room, but was not obvious to me when I was first thinking about these models, is that when you look at the ADS-CFT metric, or the ADS metric, sorry, we have the spatial components, which is described by this tessellation that we've put our tensors in, but we also have the time component, where time is dilating towards the center of the bulk. And you can think of this by if you've got a stationary observer in the center of the bulk and a stationary observer near the boundary, then the proper time that they experience for the same coordinate time is going to differ. And from the metric, you can get an equation that relates these two times in terms of this exponentially dilating as I go into the bulk. Okay, so this may seem like an obvious thing, but when we look at our time slices, we have the spatial component, but we don't have any idea of the time part of the metric. And if we're looking at a time slice and just then propagating in time, maybe that's what was causing some issues. So the first thing we did is to look at this equation that we got from the metric and translate this into our model parameters. So before we had rho, which was representing sort of distance to the distance from the center of the bulk, and then at rho going to infinity being the asymptotic boundary. What we have here is the layers of tensors. So with x equals 0 being like the center, which we've got because we've truncated, and then going out to our truncation radius r. We end up with a sort of similar-ish looking relation where the coordinate times at different layers in the network are related by some exponential, where we now have a slightly different equation where we've entered tau, which is sort of a proxy for curvature in our model that comes from the tessellation that we've chosen. Okay, and then the question is how do we then implement this time dilation? And the way we chose to is just to put it in by hand by making the bulk interaction terms decay exponentially towards the center of the bulk. So when we think about our local Hamiltonians in the bulk now, we're going to assert that the local Hamiltonian that acts on like tensor at layer X has this scaling so that it's getting exponentially weaker into the center of the bulk. And this fixed a lot of things for us in terms of the blow up of interaction strength we had before. So So if we now think about a particle traveling across the bulk and look at the boundary Hamiltonian at each point, we can now see that the propagation of information like matches the scalings that we expect from the bulk. Whereas before we had these fast. And then also if we think about the light cones from butterfly velocities, if we introduce this scaling, we end up sort of like straightening our light cones out. So it looks a lot more like what we'd expect on a CFT theory of the boundary. And just to elaborate on that last point, so butterfly velocities are these limits of propagations of information restricted to some subspace. So here in our toy model, we're restricting to the code space on the boundary, which is dual to these semi-classical geometries in the bulk. And when you look at this, it sort of seems sort of obvious. So if I take a boundary operator that's supported on A, and I look at its entanglement wedge, and then I allow it to propagate for some time delta t, so it's now supported on this green region, you can see that the tangential light cones in the bulk are different depending on how deep it is into the bulk. So a bulk operator acting at x1 is traveled less distance at that time than a bulk operator acting at x2. And this is then respected if we think about our Hamiltonian having a decaying amplitude. Okay, so we've recovered some of these causal features, and now we want to think about whether we can use these toy models to build a rigorous attack on position-based cryptography. So the idea would be you set up your inputs and your outputs, as we discussed before, and you'd allow it to propagate in by choosing some bulk Hamiltonian, which sort of just swaps the quantum state towards the center, again with these decaying weights. And because they've got the decaying weights and it's all nice, it's going to propagate in nice light cones on the boundary. And then the tricky bit gets to the middle, where we want to simulate the unit tree. So in the center of the bulk, we now have some general local unit tree that's generated by an n-local bulk Hamiltonian. And we need to use the tensor network map to push this operator onto the boundary into these two disjoint regions so that we can act non-locally on them in the boundary and do a non-local protocol. And we need to assume we've got some good simulator in order to keep the boundary causal at this point. Okay, and just a note, so while the Hamiltonian at the center of the bulk is exponentially small, this is sort of okay, even though we have these higher weight swaps, because we can simulate this piecewise, and I know that doesn't sound sort of very physical, but if we just think about if we could construct the boundary protocol that the cryptographers would be interested in, you could think about turning off the strong swaps so that by the time we get to the center, the exponential small Hamiltonian isn't washed out by anything else. Okay, and then if that was all fine, we can then propagate out again using the swaps with the same scaling. And if the causal structure is maintained, we can use the fact that we have a lot of the entanglement features from ADS-CFT still in these tensor networks to show that we still have a bound of the entanglement of the boundary state that the boundary attackers have used that is linear in N. Okay, so then there are two cases to consider. The first, where position-based cryptography is known to be insecure. So if our bulk unit tree produces a non-interacting boundary Hamiltonian, like the one I've given there, or if the bulk unit tree has very low complexity, so if it's generated by a very weak Hamiltonian. And in both of these cases, it's not super interesting, but we basically get that you can do the non-local procedure because we know it's insecure. Maybe the more interesting case would be to think about when we look at position-based cryptography, where the security is not known with linear entanglement. So with a bulk Hamiltonian acting at the very center of norm scaling like tau to the minus r over n with some constant, we can do arbitrarily complex unit trees in the bulk, since the norm of h times t is equal to 1. And then if we use our tensor network, we can map out to the boundary. And because it's an isometry, we preserve the norm. And we have some H boundary that's acting on these disjoint sets. But we need to simulate these with some local Hamiltonian with properties to maintain the causality. And this is where, unfortunately, the story gets a bit stickier. So we can ask ourselves, how good can these Hamiltonian simulations be? So to maintain a causal structure during this boundary implementation of U, we require a simulating Hamiltonian that is geometrically too local on the boundary. And we need the interacting strengths to scale as poly n over epsilon times the H target, where, again, n is the number of qubits that the Hamiltonian is acting on. And remember, this Hamiltonian can act globally on these n qubits. And the epsilon is the error we get from the error we're allowing in the simulation. So in our work, we construct some new universal simulation techniques that are exponentially better than the existing methods, given that the boundary Hamiltonian is sparse. However, we can only achieve like a plus b equals 1.5, whereas we need it to be strictly to be less than or equal to 1. So we thought we were doing good, but it wasn't enough to give you anything interesting in terms of the position-based protocol. And also, when thinking along these lines, you can then argue via Lee Robinson bounds that simulations with the properties I've outlined in STAR cannot exist with a controllable error in the state. So this gives a lower bound on how good simulators can be. And there's some context from Hamiltonian simulation. The best known simulation bounds before said that you can't simulate two local all-to-all with two geometrically local using order one strengths. So this is giving a nice precise, more information about what the scaling has to be rather than just it kind of scale with the Hamiltonian. Okay, I don't know how long I am going for, but I'm just gonna wrap up. So we've set out to look at whether we can construct these non-local protocols using toy models. And while taking inspiration from the metric, we were able to get some signatures of causality. These wasn't enough to give us the protocols that would have given an attack on position-based cryptography. And also, maybe unfortunately, but with these types of toy models, even with the improved causal structure, there's provably no simulation techniques using our models that we can construct these attacks with. And this has made a nice connection, at least for me, between position-based cryptography and holography and simulation, which has led to some more precise lower bounds on Hamiltonian simulation from causality. So open questions and what would be cool to think about next. Firstly, so what other applications of these toy models with improved causality are there? So maybe the Hamiltonians that we've gained aren't good enough for the specific attacks on position-based cryptography in this way, but maybe we can use them to think more generally about time dynamics in these toy models. And then also, how can we go further to capture fully the space-time and causality in these models? What is missing? And now that we've looked at this connection, another thing interesting from my perspective is we know that there are some cases where position-based cryptography is not secure. For example, if the unit tree in the bulk is Clifford, can we use that to think about maybe what Hamiltonian is going to be easier to simulate in this way? So with that, I want to just thank you for your attention.
Questions?
Throw. So I just wanted to make sure I understood the status of things like in your second to last slide. So I guess your bounds on Hamiltonian simulation in the end, you're just proving and you're not relying on any assumptions about position-based cryptography.
Yes.
Okay, and then those bounds were like suggested to you by assuming security of position-based cryptography and then you tried to prove them other ways, I guess.
Yes.
I see, okay.
Hi, yeah, so maybe a comment and a question. So to me, it's a bit surprising, this idea of trying to have the duality between a local Hamiltonian and a local Hamiltonian on the boundary, because in my understanding of how the correspondence works, the bulk has gravity, and in gravity, the Hamiltonian is always a boundary term. So there shouldn't be a local Hamiltonian in the bulk if you're talking about a gravitational system. And then I thought that actually there's a quantum error correction realization of this, which is this Easton-Knill theorem, which says that you can't have a code where you have a sort of local Hamiltonian. I mean, I thought it basically says you can't have a local Hamiltonian on the boundary that's dual to a local Hamiltonian in the bulk. So are you familiar with the Easton-Knill, or do you have any comments about this?
Yes, I believe the Easton-Knill connection that was made was that we couldn't have this with an exact code, and when you allow some approximation, that was allowed.
Yeah, but there's a limit to how good the approximation can be, right? And in gravity, you want it to be better than what the approximate Easton-Knill theorem would allow. And then the resolution of that is that you have gravity in the bulk, so the Hamiltonian was always a boundary term to start with. So, I mean, maybe these limitations on how good it can be are part of the issue here that you were talking about. I'm not sure.
Yeah, so I think that's something that I don't know if I've understood your question correctly, is we are interested in like whether we can have this, a code that produces like disjoint, like causality where we've mapped to disjoint subsets rather than a continuous subset.
I mean, maybe the kind of codes that Annie was talking about this morning would be able to do this thing where you have the Hamiltonian as a boundary, and that. Because I feel like you need kind of a good bulk, right, for this attack to work. And
what do you mean by a good bulk? Sorry.
Well, a bulk that's described by scattering that's local, and so I mean for Alex's protocols.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, I said what I wanted to say. So.
Sorry. Maybe we can talk more. Thank you for your question.
All right. More questions. I guess I have a question which is maybe related to what was just said. So like. Usually I think of the bulk to boundary map as like some precise thing. And so here it seems like there's some ambiguity. Like I get to do stuff on the boundary, and particularly I should simulate it. So like where to take the limit where I actually recover ADS-CFT, like uncoarse grain it, right? Should I think of the boundary as just like what comes out of Happy or whatever? Or should I really think of it as like with this extra simulation step, is that already built into the bulk to boundary map?
Yeah, so I guess the way we've seen it is the tensor network is some initial simulation. It's an exact simulation. And then we're just concatenating an approximate simulation. So I'm not suggesting maybe that the real boundary Hamiltonian is the thing that's spat out of like perturbation gadgets. But maybe the fact that it allows us to have a local boundary, we can use it as a toy model to study some.
Okay. Any more questions? If not, let's thank Harriet again.